Hello friends, we will now discuss chapter number 14 of International Finance, that is International Funded Projects. This deals with all large turnkey projects. And the topics that we will cover is, first of all, we'll try to understand what is export turnkey projects, and then funding of the project, that is project funding and finance. Here we will look at International Bank for Reconstruction and Development. Similar to that would be International Development Association. Similar to that would be the International Financial Corporation. And then various multilateral development bank funded projects. We will also look at the World Bank funded projects in India, how the World Bank is assisting India for projects. And of course, the most important factor for our Indian exporters of large projects would be the deemed export. That means it would be termed as an export, but not actual physical transfer of goods from India to foreign country, but to the export project in India. That is deemed export. Let us understand each factor step by step. First, let us understand what is export turnkey project. I'll give you an expanded definition. Export of engineering goods on deferred payment terms and execution of turnkey projects and civil construction contracts abroad are collectively referred to as project exports. Mind you, here it is abroad, then it is termed as export project. Project exports refers to setting up of engineering, construction, or infrastructure projects overseas. It could also involve export of engineering consultancy or other engineering services as desired by the project owner. If not the entire contract, at least some portion of the contract. It is a scheme of development work to be executed by employing the best technologies, continuous innovation and resources. That is what large projects are for. What is the significance of this type of business? It has got a very big significance. Project exports are regarded as key indicators of the technical maturity and industrial capabilities of a country and have occupied an important place, I would say a very important place, in India's export portfolio. We have the expertise, yes. We have put it on a very important portfolio for Indian exporters. It acts as a catalyst for technological maturity and advancement of Indian construction and engineering companies. Our Indian construction and engineering companies are now able to go into the overseas market with their advanced technological maturity. Since the realization from overseas projects are spread over a longer term period, they provide regular flow of foreign exchange. Once an export project contract is signed, not only the exporter but even the India government knows that this is the quantum of foreign currency which will come into the country over a period of time. This also helps to absorb fluctuations in foreign exchange due to the outflows. Of course, there is an outflow also in terms of imported components required for that project. And yeah, we in India have been actively involved in project exports with many Indian companies, making a name internationally in the project exports market. Quite a long time back, Iraq was devastated due to the war. And it is the Indian companies who went into the Iraq and helped build Iraq. We had taken over the construction and infrastructure work in Iraq. That was one of the biggest forms of project exports which we have accomplished a long time back. Subsequently, we are on to other companies also. What are the advantages of this kind of project exports? It is an opportunity to export a set of goods and services bundled within project exports and also on a standalone basis after completion of the project in the country also. This gives a fillip to other ancillary industries also to establish strategic presence in the country in future. Once our contractors are working in a particular country, and by supplying the various components, supplying various forms of machinery, equipments, etc., that country comes to know, yes, India is supplying these goods for this project, so it must be very good. So our ancillary industries can export their respective goods, machineries, equipments on a standalone basis also to other factories in that country. It can be used as an effective tool to maintain trade balance by due to capital intensive nature of the project. Support funding provided by the banking system is of self-liquidating nature over a period of time. And it also provides employment opportunities to trained and skilled manpower. It also provides exposures to state-of-the-art construction technologies to both industry and the manpower employed in that particular project. Such large projects require a credit insurance, and there are export credit insurance agencies. Export credit insurance is required to protect exporters from the consequences of payment risk, both political and commercial, and to enable them to expand their overseas business without any fear of loss. And here, as I've explained to you before, ECGC Limited provides the export credit insurance facilities to the exporters and banks in India. They have got various export credit risk insurance products to suit the requirements of Indian exporters and also the commercial banks. And by this yardstick, ECGC is an export promotion organization to improve the competitive capacity of Indian exporters. How? By giving them credit insurance covers comparable to those available to other competitors from most other countries. Why? Because our project exporters have got to compete with large organizations of all other countries. They've got to develop their competitiveness. And this is where ECGC is helping them to withstand such a competition. To help the exporters, we also have the Export Project Export Promotion Council of India, PEPC. Project exports depend on securing rights to develop major projects overseas, which depend heavily on the volatile nature of global investment flows, political climate, and pace of government contracts being awarded everywhere. This is where PEPC has taken the initiative to provide a more comprehensive information on all the project opportunities in many markets throughout the world. It is virtually acting as a marketing agent for project exporters. Member companies have reported market diversification projects in new countries and have enhanced securing of overseas contracts by this guidance given by PEPC. Countries have assumed great significance in infrastructure projects, enabling connectivity across continents, connectivity from one continent to another also. Indian government has initiated a very conducive policy framework for project exports, which would help the Indian companies to actively participate in many more such projects. Of course, this will also help the Indian economy to accrue the desired benefits. Ultimately, our economy as a whole will be benefited on account of these project exports. Of course, PEPC has suggested certain data on the following key issues. They have prepared certain data, and that data is being provided to the project exporters. One, to identify goods and services utilized in overseas projects and help in inputs not being sourced from India to be sourced from foreign countries. To enhance the Indian content that these are things which are being sourced from other countries, so the Indian manufacturers will be guided to produce similar kinds of goods. Segregation of goods component in project exports would help in claiming export promotion benefits, thereby encouraging more companies to explore overseas markets. This is a point which PEPC has suggested to the government, that don't declare the project as a whole as far as export promotion benefits are concerned. Different components, different machinery, different equipments which go into the project has got different types of benefits applicable to that particular type of goods as far as government incentives are concerned. And therefore, such type of differentiation should be allowed to the exporter by not taking the entire project as a whole under one single category, to allow categorization of different products as per the available benefits from the government. Project exports identifier would help segregate other mode 3 services from project exports. These are various types of services involved for the project. Not only the goods, it's also services. This will allow exemption from clauses that disqualifies companies with commercial presence overseas to claim benefit. Exemption clauses are available in India for various types of goods and services from various taxes. So, by allowing them to claim on individualistic components, machinery, equipment, etc., benefits can be claimed separately. It will also help establish a mechanism to claim export benefits on 10 to 15% value held back for performance guarantee. Now, what happens? Such type of large projects, there is always a performance guarantee being held back by the project authority, equivalent to 10 to 15% of the value over a certain period of time. And that amount is granted after a few years, subject to performance guarantee of the entire project. And therefore, the benefits which are applicable to that 10-15% which is being held back because the payment has not come in foreign exchange, they are not able to claim the benefits. So the suggestion being given by PEPC is that the exporters should be allowed to claim that benefits of 10 to 15% of the held back guarantee along with the benefits which they are claiming now. Not to give benefits on a reduced level of that quantum. Now, as far as funding is concerned, finance requirement is concerned, it's total different cup of tea as far as these large projects are concerned. Funding is the act of providing financial resources, usually in the form of money or other values, such as effort or time, to finance a need, a program or project, usually by an organization or a company. The term financing is used when the firm acquires capital from external sources, not their own finance, but external sources. Here, funds are injected into the market as capital by lenders and taken as loans by the borrowers. Borrowers are the project owners or contractors. To raise capital, you also require funds from investors who are interested in the investments. There has got to be a large number of investors who are only interested in the investment and not performance of the project. You have to present these investors with a high return projects by displaying high level potentials of the project. Investors would be more attracted to put their money into these projects. Otherwise, why will an investor come to your project? And without the investors, no project can take off at all, because project requires a high level of financing, funding over a long period of time. And there you have got a specific type of project finance. Project finance is the long-term financing of industrial and infrastructure projects based upon the projected cash flow of the project, rather than the balance sheet of its sponsors or owners. Normally, if you go and want to take loan from the bank, they will look at your balance sheet and say, the balance sheet shows profitability so much, so we will give you loan to this extent only. But as far as projects are concerned, no, such balance sheets are not looked into. Because the sponsors have a very nil balance sheet, it's only a startup. So, depending on future cash flow, what would be the stage, time and quantum? That would be interesting to the investors. A project financing structure involves a number of equity investors known as sponsors or a syndicate. They may be of banks or other lending institutions, and they provide loans to that particular operation. It cannot be a single entity. It has got to be a group. Even bank will not be a single bank. It will be a group of banks. The financing is typically secured by all the assets of the project, including the revenue producing contracts. There's no other guarantee other than the asset which is being created by the project, including the revenue, future revenue generation, which would arise once the project starts working. And therefore, a special purpose vehicle or entity or company is created for each project. And that special purpose vehicle or entity has no assets other than that particular project. No other assets. Only that project is the asset. Of course, looking to the whole structure of the project finance is often more complicated than alternative financing methods. It's very complicated. It's not so easy, not so simple. It has been used most commonly in the telecommunications, mining, transportation, power industries, as well as sports and entertainment venues. In all these cases, a huge finance is required at the beginning stage, and when the project is over, it starts generating funds. That becomes funds to be paid to the lenders, including the profit margins, etc. Of course, a project may be subject to a number of technical, environmental, economic, and political risks. These are all inherent risks in any large project that you will see. In spite of that, yes, they are working. Several long-term contracts, such as construction, supply, offtake, and concessional agreements, along with a variety of joint ownership structures, are used to align incentives and deter opportunist behavior by any party involved in the project. There cannot be opportunistic behavior at all over here. At each level, there are various types of contracts which have been inbuilt into the project. And the patterns of implementations are sometimes referred to as project delivery methods. Most important factor is the project delivery method. A riskier and more expensive project may require limited recourse financing, duly secured by a surety from sponsors. There has got to be a surety from the sponsors also. A complex project finance structure may incorporate corporate finance, securitization, insurance provisions, or other type of collateral enhancement to mitigate unallocated risk. There is always different types of risk, including unforeseen, unallocated risks. So these have all got to be covered by different methods. The new project finance structures emerged primarily in response to the opportunities presented by long-term power purchase contracts. This was the first foremost type of contract made out, a power purchase contract, available from utilities and government entities. The biggest form of contract was power purchase contract, which is purchasing the power by a government entity to be distributed to the consumers, end consumers. And that entity would collect payment from the entities, consumers, and pay to the sponsors and other funding agencies. The structure has evolved and forms the basis for energy and other projects throughout the world. This type of power purchase contract has been restructured for other projects also throughout the world. There are standard contracts being made, entered into. Let's understand who are the parties to financing the project. There's a whole list of parties performing different levels. Okay. The first one is the sponsor. That is typically also an equity investor. Then comes the lenders. There are two types of lenders. One is senior lenders who will be giving the maximum support, and mezzanine, middle level lenders. Off-takers. Off-takers means those who will purchase the produce of that project and make payment. So there is an off-taker agreement also. Contractors and equipment suppliers, operators, these are all parties to financing. All these parties will have to finance the project and receive payment subsequently. Operators, financial advisors, technical advisors, legal advisors, equity investors, regulatory agencies, multilateral agencies and export credit agencies, insurance providers, hedge providers. These are all different parties to the project financing. How does the project develop? Let's see the developing stages. Project development is the process of preparing a new project for commercial operations. They can be divided into three distinct stages. One is a pre-bid stage before the bidding starts. That is pre-consultation of the requirement and type of project that would be built up. So that is a pre-bid stage. Then comes the contract negotiation stage. And then comes the money raising stage. These are the three major stages. Based on them, a financial model is constructed by the sponsors as a tool to conduct negotiations with the investors and prepare a project appraisal report. If they are properly designed, the financial model is capable of sensitivizing analysis. That is, calculating new outputs based on a range of data variations. This is a very big form of a pre-bid study leading to the money stage. There are different types of contracts, and the most common contract is the EPC contract. The most common product for project finance is the construction contract, is engineering E, procurement P, and construction C. Engineering, procurement, and construction contract. This is the most common type of contract. An EPC contract generally provides for the obligation of the contractor to build and deliver the project facilities on a fixed price turnkey basis. That is, at a certain predetermined fixed price by a certain date, in accordance with certain specifications and with certain performance warranties. These are all spelt out into the EPC contract as far as any turnkey project is concerned. Turnkey is based on the idea. The basic idea over here is that when the owner takes responsibility for all the facility, all it needs to do is turn the key, open the door, turn the key, and the facility will function as it is intended to function. The owner does not have to do anything but start their production level. That is the primary objective of the turnkey project. The basic content in the EPC contract are: 1. Description of the project, price, overall project price, payment, and these payments are typically on a milestone basis. This level, so much price, this level, so much price, that is step by step milestones are created. Then completion date of the project and completion guarantee. And if not, then liquidated damages, LDs. And then performance guarantees and liquidated damages for the performance guarantee. That is, this particular will perform at this particular level. That is the performance guarantee. And of course, there will always be a cap on the liquidated damages. That the contractor will take over the guarantee of the project only under certain conditions. Liquidated damages will be only on a cap basis, not exclusive at all. Another kind of contract is again operation and maintenance contract. The operation and maintenance contract, that is O&M contract agreement, is an agreement between the project company and the operator. Of course, the owner, when he takes charge of the project, then he has got to run the project. Now, to run that project, he may appoint a O&M contractor. And there will be a different project company who will be the operator for that project. The project company delegates the operation, maintenance, and often performance management of the project to a reputable operator and expertise in the industry under the terms of the O&M agreement. The operator will be such who has got full expertise in operating such kind of projects, running the projects as per the required standards. And the basic content of the O&M contract are: 1. Definition of the services involved. Responsibilities of the operator. Provisions regarding the services rendered. All provisions are mentioned in the contract. Again, operator and maintenance contractor also has got to give liquidated damages, performance guarantees, etc. And then fee provisions. What would be his fees that he can claim for his performance? There is a concession deed created. That is an agreement between the project company and a public sector entity. It's called a concession deed. Now, normally this deed is with the government or so, normal condition. What does it do? The concession agreement concedes the use of a government asset to the project company for a specified period of time. Most probably, it is the land which is used by the project. that land is a government asset. So the concession deed is entered into for usage of that land for a certain period of time. So that creates the concession deed. And such type of concession deed will be found in most projects which involve government, like the infrastructure projects. Concessional agreement may be signed by a national or regional government, that is either the central government or the state government, or a municipality or a special purpose entity set up by the state to grant the concession. For example, let us look at the Metro Rail in Mumbai. Metro Rail in Mumbai is an infrastructure project created for the state government. And here, state government has got a special purpose entity known as MMRDA, Mumbai Metropolitan Regional Development Authority. This is the authority which has looked into all the aspects of that project is concerned. And the operation part of the Metro Rail is being given to Ambani Group of Companies. So O&M contract is with the Ambani Group of Companies. So these are the stages, practical stages of different types of infrastructure projects. Let's look at some of the examples of the concession deeds. A toll road, you see so many toll nakas around various cities nowadays, or in between highway projects or tunnel, for which concession agreement giving a right to collect tolls, fares from the public, or where payments are made by the contracting authority based on usage by the public. Either the government entity or municipal entity makes payment to the contractor, or it allows the contractor to collect from the public for using that infrastructure project. A transport system, that is, examples are railways and metros, for which the public pays fare to the private company. Government does not pay fare to the, public does not pay fare to the government, but to the entity who's operating that. Utility projects where payments are made by a municipality or by end users. Most of your water treatment plants and sewage treatment plants are utility projects by the various municipalities. And normally payments are given by the municipality and they collect a certain tax on that basis from the end users. Ports and airports authorities, their payments are usually made by airlines or shipping companies. Then you have got other public sector projects such as schools, hospitals, government buildings, where payments are made by the contracting authority. So different authorities' payments are being made, and this payment is used to satisfy the needs of the original contractors or turnkey developers. Thank you.